Hey, welcome back to the Bitcoin Matrix. I'm your host, Cedric Jungelmann. Quick thing before we dive in. This show runs independently. If you get value from it, the best way to support is to become a subscriber on Fountain. $5 a month gets you every episode a full day early, completely ad-free. If your seed phrase is sitting on a piece of paper right now, we need to fix that. Paper burns, fades, and falls apart. And that's a big reason why 30% of all Bitcoin is lost forever. Stampseed makes a DIY kit that lets you hammer your seed words deep into solid titanium. Fire resistant, waterproof, crush proof. One solid piece, no loose parts. This is how I secure my keys. Stampseed.com. Code Matrix for 15% off. I personally moved my Bitcoin off exchanges and into on-chain's collaborative multi-sig custody, and it's one of the best decisions I've made in Bitcoin. My keys, my coins, no exceptions. They also offer Bitcoin-backed loans and Bitcoin IRAs, all built the right way. Onchain.com, code Matrix10 for 10% off. If you need liquidity without selling your Bitcoin, Firefish is building exactly what I've been looking for. Non-custodial Bitcoin-backed loans. Your keys stay in multi-sig the whole time. You never hand your coins to anyone. I just set up my account and I'm exploring my first loan right now. Come learn with me. Firefish.io, code Matrix. And my family and I are heading to Camp Nakamoto, June 18th through 21st. Bitcoin summer camp on a private island in Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire. Lobster, clam bake, steak, live music, campfires, Bitcoin education, the whole family is invited. Tickets are limited because the island literally only holds so many people. Use code Matrix for 15% off. I'd love to see you there. All links are in the show notes. There are only two perfectly scarce resources in this world, time and Bitcoin. Connor Dolan figured that out the hard way, and it changed everything. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix for episode 269.
What is RE? How do you define RE?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Today, I'm joined by Connor Dolan, VP of Enterprise Sales at Onchained, former BlackRock and Capital Group guy, and someone who's thought deeply about two of the most powerful forces shaping human behavior, Bitcoin and Stoicism. In his recent essay, Connor shares how a childhood spent glued to Xbox, a piggy bank on the kitchen counter, and a brutal 2017 Bitcoin crash eventually led him to the same big question his mom used to ask him. Is this really how you want to be spending your time? We're diving into how Bitcoin rewired his time preference and how Stoicism became the perfect compass to go with Bitcoin's map. Connor Dolan, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix. How are you?
I'm great, Cedric. Thank you for having me. That's quite an intro. And it's an honor to be here and to be talking about Bitcoin and Stoicism with you.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into it. I don't think I'm as familiar with Stoicism, definitely, as you are. Kind of familiar. I probably have some, I'm thinking about it wrong, if I had to admit it. So I'm not going to explain what Stoicism is to you. I hope you explain it to me. But let's start with, growing up. What was your biggest hobby? How'd you spend your time?
Yeah, so I had a great childhood and was very fortunate to grow up in kind of the unique age of technology where it was only so far progressed. So I played a lot of video games as a kid, but even growing up, it was N64, the PlayStation, and grew up out in the countryside. So certainly spent some time out playing in the woods, but a lot of my time was, especially as I got into high school, spent playing video games. I spent a lot of my time in high school playing video games just at home over the weekends when the rest of society and my friends were out having fun, building relationships.
Yeah, why didn't you want to maybe play more sports or like party like other teams? What was it about video games that kind of drew you in so much?
Yeah, you know, I mean, and I did play my fair share of sports, and you know, I was never big or athletic enough to make it to the school teams, but you know, I don't know. I think with playing video games, there's a big aspect of problem solving and you know, critical thinking that maybe attracted my way of thinking. But yeah, you know, it's funny because I spent a ton of time playing video games growing up, and that really, in a lot of ways, was the impetus in terms of how I was thinking about writing this piece on Bitcoin and Stoicism, and just the relationship that we have with time. And, you know, youth is wasted on the young. And I spent a lot of time in growing up and in high school in front of a TV when, you know, I could have been spending that time doing a lot of other things, whether it's learning languages or playing music. But yeah.
Yeah, I kind of dwell on it a little bit because my son is a gamer and he makes video games. He learns how to code and different languages that apply that, and working with game engines. And now he's taking the gaming and he's live streaming and capturing it in video and remixing them and creating shorts. And I think he got 2,000 views on his 10th video in like an hour yesterday. And he's got 20,000 views on his channel over like 15 videos. He's sort of
chip off the old block here.
He's zooming past me. It's like, you know, I hoped to be like 2.0 of my dad, and he's like 14.0 to me. You know, I hope he gets some of my strengths and none of my weaknesses. But yeah, he's zooming by and he's trying to figure out what, you know, makes videos go viral. One thing he figured out, I never really thought about, is he does the reaction videos where you have sort of his reaction playing and someone else's reaction to him playing, so that people are interested in the video have to watch it twice to see both POVs. And he kind of games one viewer into two views. And he's thinking about this and just things I don't even think about in the short form game. And at the same time, I'm wondering, like, is this how he should be spending his time? You know, is it good that he's the like top 200 lethal company gamer in the world? You know, and he's got other pursuits like that. What do you think? I mean, like, he could be pouring this into anything, Austrian economics. Bitcoin's interesting to him. It's not terribly interesting to him, but I'm sure even like your mom had questions about, like, is this a good way of spending your time?
Yeah. As I've gotten into, so really the impetus of just, you know, my journey with Bitcoin and Stoicism and the impacts that they made on me as I dove into both was really just appreciating the scarcity of time. And it wasn't necessarily my intention starting out to like go on a personal growth journey. But as I dove into both Bitcoin and Stoicism, they both did, as a byproduct, make me think about how I was spending my time. And I think that's why when people get into Bitcoin and Stoicism, for that matter, you start to have a question about purpose and what am I doing with the limited time that I have on this earth? And I know that was part of my impetus for leaving BlackRock. It's like I was in a job that I had a great time at BlackRock for the most part, and I had a couple of different roles. And the role that I was in before I left was just one that was not the right fit for me. It didn't bring me any purpose. And it made me question every day, like, is this really what I'm going to do for the next 20 years or 30 years? And I was going through that while going into the Bitcoin rabbit hole and having an appreciation that, hey, there's another life out there where you can be doing something that you care about. And I was lucky enough to get a job in Bitcoin, and I've been doing that for 5 years, and that's been amazing. I guess my point of that being, when you start to appreciate the scarcity of time, you start to value how you're spending it more, and I think naturally question your purpose. And so the diplomatic way to go back to that question is, if that's what your son loves to do and can figure out a way to do that, and, you know, the reality is we still have to live in a society where you got to pay rent and pay taxes, and it would be amazing if everyone can just fulfill their purpose and do whatever that may be, but you have to balance that with like surviving in society. And I guess my point of that being, if there's a way for your son to do that and he truly is following his purpose in the process, then, you know, more power to it. I think about myself and like, I would love to be a business owner one day and potentially work for myself. I think that concept of independence and sovereignty, I don't necessarily want to just like retire and sit on a beach. I think I'd be bored, but like, I would love to be a business owner, and maybe that's like the next form of retirement. And I think there are a lot of opportunities today, especially with the advancement of technology, to like figure out a gap and make a quick buck. And I guess my point is, as I think about that, because I'm so lucky to be able to work at a company like Unchained and work in Bitcoin, which is just, as you can, I imagine, relate, just such a great community and experience. I guess my point being, if I were to do that, it would have to be something that I care about and actually want to spend my time doing, because time is limited. And if I'm going to go and spend my 9 to 5 or 7 days a week or whatever it may be, a majority of my time doing something, I want to actually care about it, enjoy it. And I also understand and appreciate that that's not necessarily an option for a lot of people. And so I'm very grateful to even just have the job that I have right now and work in Bitcoin and talk about something that I care about and am passionate about. And, you know, now I'm figuring out a way to add stoicism into the mix, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Unchained, I'm grateful for Unchained support coming on as a sponsor.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Unchained, and this one's personal. A while back, I made a decision that changed everything about how I think about my Bitcoin. I moved off exchanges entirely and into Unchained's multi-sig custody. Not because someone told me to, because I finally got serious about what it actually means to own Bitcoin. And leaving it on an exchange isn't owning it. With Unchained, my keys stay mine. Collaborative multi-sig, no single point of failure, no counterparty risk, no crossing my fingers that a platform doesn't blow up. We all watched what happened in 2022. I wasn't caught in it because I'd already made the move. If you're still on an exchange, this is your sign. Onchain.com, code MATRIX10. Take your Bitcoin off someone else's balance sheet.
And I'm kind of curious, though, what happened at the kitchen counter? You talk about sort of time and money, and we're kind of digging at fatherhood here.
Yeah. It was interesting going back and reflecting on my journey to Bitcoin. I mean, it took me a year to write this piece. Certainly a lot of lessons learned along the way about procrastination and discipline. And but as I spent time reflecting on kind of my journey through Bitcoin and to Bitcoin, I really was kind of always, I guess, financially inclined growing up. Like even in elementary school, I was finding ways, you know, it's like we would do chores around the house, me and my brother, and we'd save up money and get an allowance, whatever it may be. And like the way that both of us spent our money, even though he was older than me, you know, it's like he would spend it immediately and I would like be so scared about spending this money that I worked so hard for. I'm just going to build it up until there's something that I really want. Probably to an extent that was like not healthy, where it's like, dude, you're a kid, just go buy some candy, you know? But I guess my point of that being, I've always been super financially inclined, and a story that I remember really sticking with me is I started saving change as a kid. I got in third grade at like some type of school auction, this plastic yellow piggy bank that was really big. I mean, especially for a kid. And it inspired me to start saving coins that I could just find around the house, whatever. And my dad, I guess, especially back in the day, probably before credit cards were really popular, you know, spent a lot of cash and had coins that he would lay on the counter. And as I started to save, basically made a deal with him that like any coins that I found on the counter, I would get to keep. And I would just like, you know, I would be listening for the door jingling to know that he was home, because the first thing he did when he walked in was take all of his stuff out of his pockets and put it on the counter. And I started saving up money, saving up these coins. And it took me, I think, a year, maybe 2 years to save it up. And it was like $120 or something like that when I finally took it to the, you know, I had cracked the piggy bank open and I separated all the coins out. And that was just kind of, I feel like in retrospect, kind of an uncommon thing for a, you know, 8-year-old, 9-year-old to really care about at that age, when a lot of my friends were just worried about playing sports or playing outside. And that was really the start of me always being financially inclined. I started working when I was 14 as soon as I could. I was saving money. I got into stocks in high school, really as a hobby slash a way to take my dollars and make it work for me. Became a finance major in college and started working in traditional finance for a number of years after I graduated. And the point of all that being, especially in my head at that point, like I thought I had had it even at 19 or 21, had it all figured out. Like I was, especially compared to my peers, like I thought I knew a lot about money and how money worked, and I had the results to show for it, you know? And then I started learning about Bitcoin and it makes you just question all of it. And I think that's why it's difficult for a lot of people to get into Bitcoin, because you really have to challenge preconceived notions about how money works. And as I was getting into Bitcoin, which was like really end of 2019 is when I really started diving in. I read Bitcoin Standard by Safety and Amos and learned about time preference. It's all pretty radical thinking and radical concepts, and it just makes you question how money works. I remember being, it was maybe in high school or in early college, and I asked a question about, we were learning about inflation and like 2% inflation is healthy and whatever. And I remember asking a question at one point, just kind of raised my hand, was like, can you explain to me kind of like why it's good that my dollar today is worth 98 cents next year? And, you know, there was some standard Keynesian answer about how that's healthy for the economy or whatever. And then I just remember being like not satisfied with the answer, but just like, okay, I guess like that's how it works. And I just didn't think about it again until, you know, I started seeking out that answer and reading the Bitcoin Standard. And so it was just really this journey of saving money, being almost obsessed with money growing up more than I probably should have been at my age, and thinking I had it all figured out. And then realizing through learning about Bitcoin and Austrian economics that maybe the system that we have been living in for the last however many decades is not necessarily the best way to manage the monetary system moving forward. And that's really what prompted the whole journey down the Bitcoin rabbit hole.
Yeah. So much of your background kind of resonates with me as similar to my own. Just always very interested in money. At 13, I joined sort of a contest through my local, but through my middle school, through the local newspaper, and we won a stock market contest, you know, where we all, every team got a certain amount of money, and, you know, we were able to leverage and pick what stocks we wanted to buy over a certain period of time. So I was, I don't know what it, what made me interested in money, you know, whether it was TV shows like Family Ties and Alex B. Keaton, or watching my dad, you know, work two jobs, and one of those being sort of an entrepreneurial pursuit, selling things at like flea markets and stuff. You know, so I, you know, you kind of you opened your first bank account at 10, were busting tables at Waffle House at 14, and putting your paychecks into stocks and all this stuff was kind of earlier, more hardworking than I was. When did you realize, though, that, like, working hard and saving, like, still wasn't enough? Like, what kind of more maybe about the rabbit hole journey and sort of, or did you kind of understand that before Bitcoin?
No, definitely not. And it wasn't until Bitcoin that, you know, it's, I think I even put it in my piece. I think just the whole analogy of the Matrix and waking up from the Matrix, you know, that people describe when they go down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, they question those beliefs about how money should work. You can't unsee it. And I think, you know, I'm grateful that, like, I did, like, I don't know, I got into Bitcoin really at the end of 2019. So that puts me at like 27 years old at that time. Like, I'm grateful that I was still kind of very much in the process of figuring out who I am and becoming an adult at the same time. And I think that's a natural, probably I was at the right place at the right time for me. That's why I discovered it then and not 10 years early or whatever it may be. But, you know, when I think about just where, like, my mindset was at in terms of any sort of sense of urgency or how money should work or how I should be spending my time, like, I think it probably coincided very directly with me learning about Bitcoin and going down the rabbit hole. And I think I even mention it in my piece, just the analogy that a lot of Bitcoiners use about the Matrix and kind of waking up from the Matrix and the fact that you can't unsee it. And I was very fortunate to get a good education and get a good job out of school. And so I think actually compared to my peers, I felt like for the most part, I was ahead of where I should have been at that point in my life. And coming right out of school too, it's not like you're really, especially in California, my expectations about buying a home right out of school, like my parents did, was not something that was realistic. And so I wasn't really thinking about these big life decisions and financial events to, you know, getting married and having kids and the costs associated with that. You're just focused on what your annual salary is going to be. You know, when did I realize that I was going to not be okay by just playing by the rules? And I think coming out of school, like, I was actually, I felt like ahead of my peers in a lot of ways in terms of the paycheck that I was getting. But it wasn't until I really, you know, matured a little bit as well as got into Bitcoin and started really going into Bitcoin, going down the rabbit hole, reading the Bitcoin Standard by Safety and Amous and learning about how our money was being debased constantly. And it really explained a lot of this dynamic that I realized I was dealing with, even, you know, even though I wasn't aware of it, in terms of not being able to get ahead. even in the position that I was in, where I felt like by all accounts, I should have been getting ahead compared to my peers, I was still at 27 years old, not really any closer to buying a home, not closer to having any sort of financial independence or financial freedom, and learning about how our money was being debased and losing purchasing power really answered a lot of questions for me about why that was the case, and started to spark a change in me to try and do something about it.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Firefish, and I want to be straight with you about where I'm at with this one. I just set up my Firefish account because I'm in exactly the situation they're built for. I have Bitcoin, I need liquidity, and I'm not selling. Firefish solves that with non-custodial Bitcoin-backed loans. Your Bitcoin stays in multi-sig the whole time. You never hand it over. No rehypothecation, no 2022-style blow-up risk. Just liquidity against your stack. The way it should have always worked. And right now, if it's your first loan, you save 30% on Firefish fees using code MATRIX. Through April 30th, that's actually 0% fees on your first loan. Zero. Never sell your Bitcoin. Live off it instead. Firefish.io, code MATRIX.
Yeah, it's interesting. I can really relate there because, you know, with education, you know, I'm the kind of person who might challenge, you know, authority or professor on a certain point or assumption, but you're still not going to, it's not going to change what they think is the right answer on the test. And so you're kind of pushed into conformity to do well in that system. And then same thing with sort of the paycheck, and you're working for these great companies. It's just, I think I include myself, it's hard not to be sort of blinded to what money really is when you work in traditional finance and you're steeped in Keynesian economics, I guess.
You have to seek out that information. Like, by all accounts, I should have learned about Austrian economics at some point along the way, being a quote-unquote money guy and a finance major. And maybe there's a chance they mentioned it at some point and I wasn't paying attention during that class, but it certainly wasn't a big part of my education or my career. I really never learned about Austrian economics or any other way of thinking until, you know, I was in my late 20s and had that I had to seek that information out proactively.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of went through a similar journey, but I want to ask you, so in 2017, you called Bitcoin a Ponzi scheme multiple times before 2017, you called it a Ponzi multiple times before, I guess, buying in 2017.
Right.
But, you know, and not because you understood it, but because you didn't want to miss the gains. So you buy some, and then at some point, I guess you had to tell your wife that what you've been touting as the future of finance is down like 80%. What was that moment like, or that conversation, and how difficult was that?
Yeah, I think anyone, everyone kind of has a story for the most part about that's into Bitcoin. Some people are still writing that story in terms of running into it multiple times over the years and being dismissive of it before actually accepting that it's not going away and diving into learning about it. I was no different. Apparently in college freshman year, I had a buddy that was into stocks as well. And we were talking stocks, and apparently I came into his dorm room and said, "Hey, we got to check out Bitcoin. It's the new thing." This would have been, you know, either end of 2010 or early 2011. And we like Googled it and was like, "Nah, this is a scam." And, you know, I didn't spend more than 30 seconds on it. I think it was probably at like $30 or something like that. Then you run into it a couple more times along the way, and I finally, you know, bought into it in 2017. And even still, I didn't really realize what I was doing. I was just trying to find a newfangled stock to buy, basically. And
like most, I bought into the euphoria and bought right at the peak of the market in 2017, basically 1 month before everything crashed. And, you know, that's just the way most people kind of earn their battle scars in this space. And that's how you learn, right? Is it by it dropping 60% or 70% and not dying. But, you know, luckily I was early enough and only had so much income to even invest in the first place that it wasn't like I was like, you know, investing my life savings or anything like that. But certainly felt like I had egg on my face for a while in terms of, you know, I had just been talking to my girlfriend at the time, you know, how great Bitcoin was. Now it's the future and it's only going to go up. And, you know, Bitcoin humbles us all. The stoicism is very rooted in humility and discipline. And Bitcoin, in some ways, whether you like it or not, is rooted in that same values in terms of humbling us and reminding us that we don't know everything.
Yeah, it's a very, well, it's a very humbling journey, I guess, for all of us. I think a lot of us can relate to that. Do you think, I guess, that's sort of a recognition of our own lack of discipline in those humbling moments? You know, even if we didn't put all of our life savings in something, but that we were, you know, so speculative on it or euphoric at one moment. And then, you know, it's like an interesting juxtaposition. You know, the smart money guys get really excited about something and then sort of have that crash moment. You learn a lot about life, I guess, their cycles. And it's not just learning about money, I think, but your own managing your own expectations and then what you share with others about your expectations or, mm-hmm. you know, and then learning about risk management and all the capital allocation and position sizing.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I got into both Bitcoin and Stoicism at the same time, really, and they play very well off of each other. And I think Bitcoin gives this almost arena to be practicing a lot of these Stoic values on a daily basis. Bitcoin certainly humbles you. And I think it's always important to remind you, you know, have a reminder that you're not as smart as you think you are and that there's always more that can learn and, you know, more that you can learn. And I guess, you know, when I think about the journey, you have to humble yourself in order to get Bitcoin because you have to accept that the way things are and the preconceived notions that you've had about how the world works maybe aren't true. And like, it is a humbling moment to question yourself and your previous understandings. And I think that's one of the issues that prevents a lot of, especially older, more successful individuals from getting into Bitcoin, is that by opening up the possibility that Bitcoiners are right, at the same time, you are accepting or admitting that maybe some of these foundations that you've built your life and career off of aren't what you think they are. And, you know, one of my favorite pieces of all time that I still recommend to people is Why the Yuppie Elite Dismiss Bitcoin by Croesus, I believe is how you pronounce it. And a huge part of his piece is basically talking about how, you know, you see some of the most successful people in the world in circles like doctors and academics and traditional finance people dismissing Bitcoin from an angle of, basically, if Bitcoin were something to know about, I would have already known about it. Some dude in his basement that's, you know, on his mom's Netflix subscription. Not taking a shot at anyone who's in that position. That's me, by the way. But, you know, they're not going to know about Bitcoin if it were something worth knowing about before me. And so
the lack of humility is ultimately what prevents them from having an open mind to the fact that, you know, and you think about someone who's built a career for three decades in traditional finance, and you're learning about the Cantillon effect and the fact that, oh, maybe I benefited from it, and maybe like I'm not the best stock picker in the world, or that I'm this amazing financial planner. I was just kind of in the right place in the right time. Accepting that Bitcoin is right is also kind of accepting some of these hard truths. And so I think a lot of people just naturally like dismiss it, and maybe we'll continue to dismiss it. But yeah, it's an interesting going through Bitcoin and the Bitcoin rabbit hole process, I think, is a very humbling experience in general. And then once you're in it, you're constantly being humbled in terms of price not doing what you think it's going to do, or you know, any number of different things. It's a really interesting battleground to talking about, like, I don't know, I feel like stoicism, there's an overlap with like the concept of killing your heroes and not, you know, making anyone out to be putting anyone on a pedestal. I feel like we see that a lot in Bitcoin and crypto, where it's like a good practice to have is really not like put anyone on a pedestal, because the reality is Bitcoin doesn't care about any of this. Bitcoin is code. It's TikTok next block. And yeah, anyways, that's some of my thoughts on Bitcoin as a stoic arena, I guess.
Yeah, it's awesome you mentioned why the Yuppie Elite dismissed Bitcoin. But Cretius, a.k.a. Jesse Myers, he was on episode 128 from November or October of 2022. I recommend people go back to that. You talk about sort of, I wonder, you know, you said you're a stubborn investor, I think, in the piece. And at, you know, what point do Bitcoiners like wonder if around stubbornness and sort of like maybe if we continue to be humbled in ways we can't imagine? You know, I kind of wonder sorting about that. And like, so how much of that, you know, Bitcoiners is like not wanting to lose versus genuine Bitcoin conviction?
Well, it's like the bell curve, right? You know, the bell curve meme of the IQ test, and the people on the left and the right are the, you know, pick your meme of choice. But in this scenario, I guess the Bitcoiners. Yeah, I mean, I don't think being a stubborn investor is by any sense a good quality to have. It benefited me in this scenario, but really it's rooted in a fact of not wanting to lose and not wanting to admit that you're wrong, right? Like, I guess at its core, it's a very anti-stoic approach. And I think, you know, I think there is certainly a subsect of the Bitcoin investors that are here for the long term that don't have any interest in learning about Bitcoin or its investment thesis. They're focused on number go up, and all you have to tell them is fixed supply and digital commodity or whatever it is that is getting them to buy Bitcoin and hold it for the long term, regardless of the movements up and down. I, from my experience and being in the space for 5 years now, working in the space for 5 years, I think, for the most part, my experience has been it's not so much being a stubborn investor, it's being an informed investor. I think one of the most important aspects of anyone going on a Bitcoin educational journey is to actually learn about how Bitcoin works, how the blockchain works, how the fixed supply is managed, the difficulty adjustment, the underlying investment thesis. I think for a lot of people on their Bitcoin journey, from what I've seen and from what I've lived through, is that you reach this point that you see that Bitcoin is the future. It is the life raft to the Titanic. And you want to make sure all of your friends and all of your family hop on to a lifeboat, because the Titanic is sinking and you care so much about them that it can become annoying hearing how much you need to jump on this lifeboat. And you go through a phase where you're telling everyone to buy Bitcoin and that it's the future, and that, you know, it becomes to a point where, I mean, I'll speak for myself here. I got people to, I encouraged people and convinced people to buy Bitcoin because of how strongly I felt about it. And because of the hours that I had put in to learning and educating myself on how Bitcoin worked. But they weren't going through that same educational journey. They were just buying Bitcoin because someone told them to buy Bitcoins. You know, he was very passionate about it and making a good case, whatever it may be, but they hadn't gone through the same 100 hours. And so naturally, when Bitcoin inevitably drops 30% or 50% or 70% or whatever it may be, these same individuals that bought it without really being an informed investor, it's the first thing that they're going to sell because there's no conviction. There's no understanding or education of why they even bought it outside of Connor told me to do it every day, you know, every day for a month. And I wanted to shut him up. It was a successful, you know, my mom owns still a little Bitcoin today because she bought some back in the day purely to shut me up. And, but the reality is, you know, I do not really try and tell anyone to buy Bitcoin anymore or convince people to buy Bitcoin. Everyone knows I'm the Bitcoin guy, and I am here to answer questions and help you on your educational journey and really just point you to resources that I think are great starting points. But, you know, the stubborn investor, there's always going to be a segment of the community that I think is just in it for the number go up. And I think the informed investor is, I never see anyone. I would be curious your perspective because you've been doing this a while and speak with a lot of people, but I never really see anyone that's become an informed investor on Bitcoin and then changed their mind afterwards. Everyone that I've seen that goes down the rabbit hole and gets educated, they stay there, they go deeper. They don't necessarily say, oh yeah, I've spent however many hours on this and it doesn't make sense to me. And so every day that more and more of these informed investors join the Bitcoin community and are here for the long term, I think that's what gives me the encouragement that Bitcoin is still very much on its path towards being, you know, the global monetary asset.
Yeah. The only informed investor I could think of who's not a Bitcoiner on paper or, you know, I mean, even Dave Collum, but even Dave Collum, I think people have sent him some Bitcoin. I do think Dave's very informed. I think he's just, I think even like people like Tom Luongo, who I think is a Bitcoin aligned person, but is not, you know, if Bitcoin would fail and something else would come out better, I don't think he would care. Kind of, they have this sort of agnostic attitude. I think Dave's more on sort of, it's more the anything new is not of interest to him in terms of he's not going to reallocate anything of meaningful position size. And he just has major questions about the next battle that Bitcoin's going to go up against with the state. But I
sure.
Maybe that's a bit of a.
Well, I didn't mean to kind of throw a wrench in the spokes. I agree with you most importantly.
No. I think really, it's fair. And I think as Bitcoin matures, right? Like, I think that the number of informed investors that are not super into Bitcoin or into Bitcoin at all is growing. I think that's a natural point of kind of the maturity and adoption. So I think that's a fair point. I think that the root of the point was more so that the informed investor is the one that's sticking around for the long term, because right or wrong, their opinion is rooted in education and not just like a gut feeling that, yeah, I agree that inflation is bad and we need another solution. And so
might as well be Bitcoin. I'll buy some, you know, that's, yeah. that's not going to be a foundation for any sort of conviction.
I also think, you know, maybe some people can be informed and have a malformed opinion. You know, and I'm trying to sort of remain objective. You know, I have a lot of conviction in Bitcoin, or the utmost conviction, but I'm trying to, as this asset matures, recognize, and I think there's a lot, I really stress, and I think this is important with Unchained, you know, because Unchained does not put you in this position, but if the majority of Bitcoin are on exchanges or in ETFs, not your keys, not your market price, so around sort of number go up, Bitcoiners are becoming less and less in control, maybe, in terms of what is the market price across these exchange traded boards, or, you know, where exchanges sort of list the price.
Unchained. I personally moved my Bitcoin off exchanges into Unchained's multi-sig custody. My keys, my coins. No middleman with my coins. They also do Bitcoin-backed loans and Bitcoin IRAs. All built the right way. All Bitcoin only. If you haven't made that move yet, now's the time. Unchained.com, code Matrix10.
So you discovered stoicism in your first week at Unchained through a coworker, I think named Jose. Why do you think so many Bitcoiners end up gravitating towards stoicism? What is it about Bitcoin that primes people for that philosophy? Because I'm assuming, right, bear market's probably a great time to be a stoic, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it certainly helps. I mean, I guess as an important maybe starting point, I probably should have covered it earlier, but, you know, what is stoicism? Stoicism is a philosophy that's been around for over 2,000 years, and it's really regarded as one of the building blocks of modern day philosophy. And it's rooted in the concept of focusing on what you can control. And at the end of the day, all we can control is our thoughts, our actions, how we react and respond to life. And what made stoicism so important, and I think revolutionary in terms of the development of philosophy, from my understanding, is that it really laid out a framework on how to actually live a quote-unquote virtuous life. And so it's almost a fancy way of saying, like, in my opinion, it's really like the OG, like, self-help books, and guidance on how to be a good person and be a happy person. And so I, shortly after I got my job at Unchained, I was talking with a coworker, Jose, and we were really hitting it off and just kind of talking about interests and self-improvement. I had gotten into self-improvement books in college and I read a lot of them, but none of it ever really like sunk in. I implemented these things for like a week at a time, whatever, 4-hour work week or whatever. I would pull these systems from these self-help books, but nothing ever stuck. And so when I was chatting with Jose and we were just riffing and he was talking about journaling and stoicism, you know, I think I was primed to learn about it and dive into it because I had just gone through a two-year-long rabbit hole intellectual journey with Bitcoin. And I saw the benefits of learning and having discipline in a field and challenging yourself to learn more. And like, you feel excited about something, lean into that. And so maybe I was just off of the high of, you know, working at Unchained and following my purpose and all that. But I basically was like, all right, I'll give it a try. And Ryan Holiday is one of the
most popular modern day Stoics today. I think he's really credited as making Stoicism popular to the average person. And he's got a bunch of great content out there, some really good books. He also has this podcast called the Daily Stoic Podcast. And there are some long form interviews in there that are really interesting. But a big part of this podcast is basically just a single Stoic lesson that you can listen to in 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 8 minutes and practice for that day. A huge aspect of Stoicism and Stoic philosophy is an ongoing practice. It's not like you go to college and you get a master's in Stoic philosophy and it's like, all right, I'm a Stoic now. It's something that you work on every single day, trying to be a better person for the rest of your life. And I think there's a lot of overlap between Stoicism and religion in that regard. A framework to follow on practice on an ongoing basis to try and be a better person and live a good life and be happy and answer some of these big questions about life. And so for whatever reason, it stuck and I started really getting into Stoicism and trying to implement some of these small little values in my life. And maybe it's just another kind of matrix, you can't unsee it thing. But once I started like learning about Stoicism and getting into it, I started hearing about it everywhere. And at this time, I was also like diving fully into Unchained and Bitcoin. And I met a lot of these Bitcoin events and conferences that were putting on in Austin, all around the country. And I just noticed that specifically with Bitcoiners, Stoicism kept popping up. And I had never heard about Stoicism really or looked into it at all in my life up to that point, you know, at almost 30 years old. And now I'm like running into it once a week or a couple of times a week. And so it really just started to make me think about like, why are Bitcoiners so into Stoicism? And that was the thread that I ultimately pulled on as I, you know, kind of made the decision to write a piece and, you know, share my thoughts on Bitcoin and Stoicism, really ultimately with the point of trying to like educate people about how great both Bitcoin and Stoicism are and the positive impact that learning about both have made in my life. And really, I think the fact that they complement each other so well that learning about both and diving into both at the same time, I believe has made a compounding positive effect on my life that wouldn't have necessarily happened just being into one or the other.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely hear about Stoicism more, I think, through the Bitcoin space, but Bitcoin kind of has some convergence with some other vectors. It tends to be predominantly male, tend to work out and eat well or eat red meat. So I didn't know how much Stoicism is related to those things. You describe Bitcoin as a map and Stoicism as the compass. Break that down for listeners. What does each one actually do differently in your life?
This portion of the show is brought to you by Stampseed, and I want to be real with you about this one. I cannot live with a single point of failure. That's just how I'm wired when it comes to my Bitcoin. Hardware wallet, multi-sig, the whole setup. I take custody very seriously. But for a long time, the weakest link in my entire security setup was a piece of paper. My seed phrase, written down, sitting there, vulnerable to anything. Stampseed fixed that. I hammered my seed words into medical-grade titanium myself. Fireproof, waterproof, crush-proof. It will survive anything that paper won't, and paper won't survive much. If you've built a serious custody setup and you're still trusting paper, you're not done yet. Stampseed.com, code MATRIX for 15% off. Finish the job.
Sure. Yeah, and I do think there is an interesting element there as well with like biohacking and carnivore diet. And I think you naturally see Bitcoiners, you know, or at least a part of the Bitcoin community focused on optimizing their health and living longer. And And I think a lot of that has to do with their relationship with time and understanding that, you know, Bitcoin gives you hope. It makes you think about the future. It makes you think about the person that I'm going to be when I'm 40 years old or 50 years old. I want that person to be as healthy as possible. I've never thought about 50-year-old me before, but now I am. And I think about the life that that person should be living. And I want to be healthier and I want to have financial freedom. And I'm going to create a 10-year plan in terms of how to get that ranch in Wyoming, whatever it may be. And so Stoicism, which is really focused on like self-improvement and how to live a virtuous life, I think ties in very closely with that self-improvement biohacking mindset. And so I do think that there's an element to that where that's why you hear about it so much within the Bitcoin circle. Bitcoin is the map and Stoicism is the compass. When I decided to write about this, which was really just inspired by working at Unchained and working in Bitcoin, as I'm sure you've run into a lot over the years, like, I don't know, Bitcoiners are a very unique, ambitious bunch. They're very passionate. And the concept of writing something because you're passionate about it or excited about it, I feel like is much more common within the Bitcoin community than any other community that I've been a part of. And I've never been a writer. I don't consider myself a writer. This is the first time I've ever written something for fun, really. And that's why it took me a year to do. But I was surrounded by a bunch of Bitcoiners at Unchained that are super ambitious. They write all the time, just kind of inspired me and forced me to write this piece. And when I was trying to really pull on the thread of like, why is there that relationship between Bitcoin and Stoicism? What I ultimately settled on was that both have a really unique relationship with how we perceive time. And I think ultimately introducing both Bitcoin and Stoicism into my life, they both made really positive benefits on how I was living my life, what I was spending my time on, how I was eating, how I was treating my health. And I think part of that was intentional, but part of that was almost subconscious, just from having an awareness of time and the scarcity of time. I think it's very easy, especially in the world that we live in today, filled with distractions and technology and the newest fangled video games or whatever your distraction of choice is. It's very easy to go on autopilot and waste months or years of your life and kind of wake up and be like, holy crap, I'm X amount of years old. When did that happen? It's very hard being present. And it's very easy and almost more comfortable to just not think about the fact that time is fleeting. And so Bitcoin forces you to look in the mirror and accept that time is finite. And Stoicism, much in the same way, I think makes you have similar questions about the scarcity of time and how are we going to live our life. And so, point of that being, the overlap, I think, from both Stoicism and Bitcoin is this forced awareness of time and how you're spending your time. And it becomes a mindset and a lifestyle in terms of constantly asking yourself, how am I spending my time? Am I happy about, you know, at the end of the day, am I happy with how I spent my time today? And being honest with yourself is, if you're honest with yourself and you're like, no, I'm not happy with how I spent my time today, that's ultimately what starts to encourage change. And I know I experienced it personally. I've made some really big improvements in my life. It's taken years to do so. And I'm not perfect, but having that awareness and asking that question on an ongoing basis, it's not like an overnight thing, but I think that had a really big impact on how I was living my life and how I was treating time. When I started to dive in, though, into Bitcoin's relationship with time and Stoicism's relationship with time, I realized they really approach it, or at least I approached it, from two completely different angles. Bitcoin made me zoom out and really start to think about what I was going to, you know, okay, Bitcoin is hope. It's this fixed supply that is deflationary. It maintains and theoretically increases my purchasing power over time. For the first time in my life, I have hope that I can actually break out of the rat race and not wait until I'm 65 years old to retire, having worked a 9-to-5 job for however many decades. It gives you hope that there is actually a future that you can take control of, that's a future that you are crafting and painting. And so it makes you zoom out in that regard, even if it's hard today, you know, proof of work, even if I don't want to go to the gym, even if I have work to do and it's 5 p.m., but I know that putting in a couple of extra hours today will put me in a much better position 12 months from now. You start to be open to that decision and that change of behavior because there's actually a light at the end of the tunnel now. And so in a lot of ways, I realized Bitcoin made me zoom out and start to, it changed my spending habits. It changed my exercise and my health because I was thinking long term. It wasn't such a cynical viewpoint of the world. When I got into Stoicism, though, a huge aspect of Stoicism and a really popular phrase is memento mori. And basically the translation, I think, is something along the lines of like, remember, you're going to die. The way as the story goes, back in, you know, I think the Roman times, during the Roman Empire, there was a Roman general who was very successful. And he would ride into town after battle with his troops, and he would pay this slave servant to whisper in his ears as he rode through the town basking in the celebration. You would have someone whisper in his ears, memento mori. Reminder that you're going to remember that you're going to die. This too shall pass, basically. And so it's just a really good sentiment in terms of how to live your life. The Stoics as a whole embraced death, and a huge aspect of Stoic philosophy is not just avoiding death or fearing death, but thinking about death actually on a regular basis can be a very healthy thing, because it reminds you that time is fleeting, that time is scarce, and that really at the end of the day, we only have today. And so, like, in my piece, I was writing a bit about how I thought it was really interesting. The concept of working for the weekend is really just very commonplace today. That's kind of how most people live their lives, is spending 5 days, a majority of their time working for 2 days of enjoyment. People make jokes about working for the weekend, make jokes about how it's Monday and all these different things. And a Stoic would tell you, like, Saturday is not guaranteed. You know, the fact that you make it to the weekend is not a sure thing. You should not be prolonging living your life and chasing that purpose, chasing that enjoyment, because only this moment, right? Even tonight is not guaranteed, right? And so they approach time from opposite directions. Bitcoin makes you think super long term about the future, and Stoicism, I found, really grounded me to the present. You can't have one or the other. When I wrote this piece, I saw that someone in one of the comments basically was like, the first half of the piece, I felt really sorry for Connor. And I never thought about it like that. But like,
you know, when you read the first half of my piece and I'm talking about how I'm going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole and I'm basically just like delaying enjoyment, I'm avoiding any sort of spending, I'm selling all of my, you know, material things, and I'm thinking about life 20 years from now, I think there's benefit to that. But if you're only living in that mindset, you're not living in today. And so Stoicism was this really interesting balance to, you know, if you only adopt the Stoicism mindset and memento mori, you get into like YOLO and you only live once and you start making, you know, ridiculously dangerous decisions, financial or otherwise, because tomorrow's not guaranteed, right? There's a balance there. And so I found that there was this really nice balance between Bitcoin, which had me zoom out and focus on the future, Stoicism reeling me into the present. And when I think about the compass and map analogy, to go back to your initial question, Bitcoin really is the map in the sense of laying out what I think my journey is going to potentially look like over the next 20 years and 30 years. And the money that I'm putting away into Bitcoin is my savings. I don't plan on touching that for the next 10 plus years. That is going to set me up for my future down the line. Hopefully I make it there. It's not a guarantee, but I'm going to build for that future under the assumption that I do make it there. But I'm also going to live life today with the understanding that I may not make it there. And it's really having that balance between both has helped me, you know, guide me and really become a foundation of how I'm choosing to spend my time every day.
Quick word from Firefish, and I'll be honest, I'm going through this myself right now. I need liquidity without selling my Bitcoin. That's the whole reason I'm here. Non-custodial Bitcoin-backed loans. Your keys stay in multi-sig. You borrow against your stack. You never hand your coins to anyone. After everything that happened in 2022, that non-custodial model isn't a nice to have. It's the only model I'd trust. First loan, you save 30% on fees with code Matrix. And through April 30th, it's actually 0%. Come learn with me. Firefish.io code Matrix. Never sell your Bitcoin. Live off of it instead.
Wow. Well, that's really fantastic. Maybe you can help explain more of this to me. We'll go through some quotes here. Maybe you could say what they actually look like to you in daily practice right now. So is it Marcus Aurelius? Am I saying that right?
Yes, sir.
So it is not death that a man should fear, but he should fear never beginning to live.
Yeah. So first off, Meditations by Marcus Aurelius is probably one of the best Stoic books you could pick up if you're interested in learning more. It's basically a journal. Marcus Aurelius was the emperor of Rome, literally the most powerful man in the world, and he was journaling to himself. He never expected any of this to be published. He's writing to himself, and he's basically writing these Stoic reminders to himself about the importance of waking up in the morning and being kind to people and being patient and reminding you that you're going to have difficult things throughout the day and you're going to deal with difficult. This is the emperor of Rome. If he had a difficult person in his meeting, he could do whatever he wanted to get them out of there. But he was writing to himself because this is how he, you know, strove to live a virtuous life. It is not death that a man should fear, but he should fear never beginning to live, was, I believe, from Meditations. And I just thought it encapsulated what we were just talking about in terms of the scarcity of time and people living on autopilot. You know, I think many people get so focused on building towards goals that are not necessarily important to them, but have been told to them that's what they should be working towards, that they end up sacrificing living in the moment or having a life. And I'm certainly not the one that's like figured it all out.
Even in the great life that I have now and the great job that I have, it's easy to, you know, it's an ongoing practice. That's the whole thing about Stoicism that I've found has really challenged me, is like this quote about, it is not death that a man should fear, but he should fear never beginning to live. Like reading that today and assessing how I lived my life over the last couple of days or the weekend may have a very different impact on me than the person I was a week ago, than the person I am a month from now. And so, I mean, I included that quote because I thought it just had a really good encapsulation of how Stoicism made me think about time, which is, life is too short. It's not guaranteed. If there's something you want to do, there's a way for you to follow your purpose and quit your job that you hate and pursue it, or start a side hustle or whatever it may be. I'm very much going through that journey right now. So it's not like I'm sitting here preaching like follow your dreams, when I'm like very still much in the process of trying to figure out what my dreams are and following them. But that's why I included it in this piece, is that I think a lot of people live their entire life without ever beginning to live, and they may live a very long life, but if it's not one where they're true to themselves and happy, then, you know, I think in some ways that's time and a life wasted. And my goal is to not look back on my life and feel that way about it.
Which quote was that again?
The one that you provided. It is not death that a man should fear, but he should fear never beginning to live. I, you know, when I think about that, I think about like being an old person at 80 years old or 90 years old and looking back on my life. And I want to make sure that I never refrained or prevented myself from quote unquote beginning to live because of what I thought I should be doing or what other people thought I should be doing.
It's interesting. Stoicism, or being a Stoic, sounds kind of like, to me, very focused, but kind of, it's just, the word sounds boring. It sounds like you're taking life down a notch, like you shouldn't enjoy it. I feel like I'm getting it wrong from some of these quotes, but it seems like there's this weird yin and yang of kind of life's going to be difficult, but don't live for tomorrow, live for today. So, but
totally.
Well, yeah. Here's another one.
I mean, I think it's a really, you know, and I'm certainly not a Stoic expert by any means. I'm very much in my Stoic rabbit hole journey right now, but I do think that they're just like any philosophy, you know, there are, I think, some contradictions or conflicting values or viewpoints that make it worth kind of a broader open discussion. I think, you know, part of it with Stoicism too is like the definition of Stoic or a Stoic person can also kind of muddy the definition of how people think about Stoic philosophers. But I mean, I think discipline and emotional discipline is a huge aspect of Stoicism, and it doesn't necessarily mean like emotion is bad or to just like remove emotion from your life. It's about being aware of the emotions that you're feeling and controlling those emotions and understanding that from a very practical perspective, if I run into a situation, if I pick the wrong line in Costco to fill up my gas tank, I can sit there and let my emotions get the better of me and get frustrated and get mad and try and, you know, find a reason or excuse as to why I got screwed over and picked the wrong line. It doesn't change the fact that whatever, you know, if it's going to be 8 minutes and 45 seconds until the pump opens up, then that's what the time's going to be. And I can focus my energy in that time on trying to be productive or doing something else or being, you know, looking at the silver lining of how it's beautiful weather out, whatever it may be. And so, you know, I think there's kind of a conception or a preconceived a misconception rather about stoicism is like removing emotion from everything. And I don't think that's so much it. It's just about being aware and controlling your emotions and trying to focus on the task at hand, and how it can be improved or learned from or solved for.
Yeah, I think a couple of things with modern life is like the battle, I think, always trying to be productive, where that could kind of be unproductive or not being present. And then if you're trying to be present, you find yourself in these vortexes of why am I on the phone for an hour and a half with this company that doesn't understand the question I'm trying to solve, and why won't they turn off my subscription? I really wish it didn't take me 90 minutes to solve this problem right now so I could be more present. And then letting that just get me sort of distracted. So you're now VP of Enterprise Sales at Onchained. How much of that career move was Bitcoin conviction, and how much was just a job opportunity? I mean, a lot of people want to work in Bitcoin.
Oh, no, I mean, 100% Bitcoin conviction. You know, easy question to answer there. I mean, you know, I had a good job at BlackRock. I joke that I would have a bigger Bitcoin stack if I stayed at BlackRock, if I was still there. But, you know, I would be a much less happy person. I mean, the reason why I wanted to join Bitcoin or Onchained was to work at a Bitcoin only company. Frankly, when I was trying to join companies back in 2021, coming from a sales background, it's like there were only so many companies that even had a single person on their team with sales or business development in the title. And so I had just reached a breaking point with my job at BlackRock in terms of finding no purpose in it and feeling like my purpose was in Bitcoin, and just started reaching out to people on LinkedIn, basically. And got 15 minutes with someone at Onchained and was lucky enough to turn that into a job.
Wow, that's great. I love to hear that. I'm a customer at Onchained, so and they're a sponsor of the show. Before we go any further, definitely want to share that. But there's another quote here, a few more before I let you go. Marcus, Emperor Marcus, also wrote, "Everything that happens happens as it should." That one kind of, again, it feels very like, just, you gotta be okay with what the past, you kind of gotta like let go. So it kind of speaks to being in the moment, speaks mm-hmm. to maybe some of the difficulty of life. A couple others here. It's impossible. This is from, how do you say this?
Epictetus.
Epictetus. That's a great name. It's epic. So Epic said, "It's impossible for a person to begin to learn what he thinks he already knows." I think Mark Twain paraphrased that later on. Seneca, is that correct?
That's right.
Is Seneca, how would Seneca describe themselves in a sentence? Is Seneca a man or a woman here?
Seneca is a man. Another Stoic... Another, you know, kind of famous Stoic philosopher, kind of one of the founders of Stoicism.
"The whole future lies in uncertainty. Live immediately." These are some powerful ones. You've said there are only two perfectly scarce resources in the world, in this world, time and Bitcoin. I would add family to that. And we've talked about Bitcoin is the map, stretching your horizon and helping you see the route ahead. Stoicism is the compass, keeping you oriented in the moment. You've also said modern monetary structures degrade the ability to delay gratification. When your money loses value each year, saving feels pointless. It's not impulsivity, it's survival logic. And you cite, I think, the marshmallow test at Stanford. Now Bitcoin's sort of the reverse marshmallow test. My final question for you is, for someone listening who's deep into Bitcoin but has never touched Stoicism, what's the one book or daily practice you tell them to start with today, maybe besides the app you've already mentioned?
Stamp Seed. My seed phrase is hammered into solid titanium.
because I cannot live with paper being the weakest link in my Bitcoin security. Fireproof, waterproof, indestructible. If you're still on paper, you're 1 ounce fire away from losing everything. Stampseed.com, code MATRIX for 15% off. Finish your custody setup the right way.
Yeah, so, I mean, if I only get to pick one book, I think I have to pick Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. It's definitely kind of the foundational Stoic book to read. This is the translation by Gregory Hayes, but that's kind of like low-hanging fruit because it's like the Stoic book. Epictetus is a really interesting Stoic philosopher, was born into slavery and worked his way up and had a really interesting, his name and story is epic. I really like his sentiment in terms of he was basically a slave his whole life, but didn't view himself as such, and actually viewed himself as more free than a lot of the people in society that were physically not slaves. They were physically freer than him, but they were prisons in their own mind, whether it was due to societal expectations or addiction to vices, whatever it may be. Seneca is another really popular one. But yeah, I would say in terms of resources to get started, I would have to recommend what got me into it, which is Meditations. And Ryan Holiday has made... There's, I think, you know, mixed opinions. I won't even go into, you know, I think within the very traditional Stoic community, they have mixed opinions about Ryan Holiday. But he's done a lot to make Stoicism accessible. I don't know anything else. So by all accounts, Ryan does a great job of explaining Stoicism to me. The Daily Stoic podcast has some great interviews and also just really quick little hits. And there's also a book by Ryan Holiday called The Lives of the Stoics. That's a really interesting one just in terms of learning about the different Stoic philosophers and how they helped build the philosophy that we have today.
That's cool. All right. And then I'm going to ask one more question before I let you go. What was brunch like for you in San Francisco?
Expensive.
Yeah.
Delicious. I mean, San Francisco, I think you mentioned maybe you lived there for a little bit. You know, it's got phenomenal food, but the cost and brunch specifically, for whatever reason, San Francisco has an ungodly amount of brunch spots, and yet all of them have a 30-minute line.
Yeah.
Waiting outside with no reservations.
I think because it's such an early town.
Yeah.
I think it's such a, people want to get up, go hiking, do things, not stay out late.
As the fog rolls in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Maybe that's it. You know, it's like the going out is, I don't know. But brunch was, I had enough brunch in San Francisco, I think, to last me a lifetime. Now I'm making up for lost time in San Diego and just eating Mexican food every day.
Well, they have the best breakfast burritos I've ever had in my life.
Chilaquiles, you know, there's some good brunch spots down here too.
I would trade 10 brunches for one meal in the morning in San Diego, Pacific Beach. But the food was fine.
When you're out here, it's my treat.
Fair enough. I'll definitely take you up on that. This has been so dope, Connor. I'll leave it to you for any parting words and let us know where we can find you and Unchained.
Well, thank you. It's honestly a huge honor to be speaking with you. I've only ever really been on the other side of the microphone. So to be interviewed for something I wrote about is really, really cool. And it means a lot. So thank you for having me. I mean, I'm on Twitter at Con Hodlin. Doing things like this hopefully inspires me to write a second piece. I think there's a lot to pull on the Bitcoin and Stoicism
thread. And yeah, no, I'm just super happy to be here. Anyone ever wants to chat stoicism and or Bitcoin, feel free to reach out to me. And yeah, appreciate your time. Definitely hope to see you out here on the West Coast soon.
Sounds great. Can't wait. Thank you so much. Talk soon.
Thanks, Cedric.
Hey, that's a wrap on this one. If this conversation added value, share it with one person who needs to hear it. That's how the Bitcoin Matrix grows. Not on Fountain yet? $5 a month gets you every episode a full day early, completely ad-free. Follow me on X. I'm at Cedric Jungelman. The show is at _BitcoinMatrix. We're in the conversation every single day. The Matrix is real. Keep on plugging. Spend your time well. Stack accordingly.